We really do find that our customer is somebody who has the ability to take a minute and hear our messaging, who wants to put something better on her body. And so that doesn't really come down to an age bracket for me. That comes down to somebody who has had enough of wearing plastic, who's had enough of wearing future garbage, and who knows that fewer better things will do her better in the long run.
I'm Michael Gloster, and this is Fashion Cast. We're talking to fashion leaders and disruptors as we seek inspirational stories and expert insight into the world's most dynamic industry. Heard in over 70 countries, we're building an international fashion community based on fashion topics that matter. Please visit our website, fashioncast.co, to join our email list and learn more. Now, enjoy the show.
This episode features Adam Taubenfliegel, co-founder of Triarchy, a U.S.-based sustainable women's denim manufacturer. Established in 2011, Triarchy was founded by Adam and his siblings, Mark and Anya. The company adheres to a strong environmental mission, aiming to demonstrate that denim manufacturing can simultaneously be sustainable, innovative, and accessible. Adam earned degrees from Capilano University and the University of British Columbia, both located in Canada. His expertise and leadership have led to recognition as one of Rivet Magazine's 50 most influential leaders in the denim industry. Adam is joining FashionCast from Los Angeles, California. Welcome to FashionCast, Adam. We're so excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Can you describe how your career shifted from working as an interior designer to becoming a fashion entrepreneur?
Yes, I started working in interior design right out of university because that is what I was always interested in. And it was right when the Olympics were happening in Vancouver. So I got the contract to do all of the hospitality suites for the Royal Bank of Canada. And so that just happened very quickly and very easily, and I was enjoying it. But then my other major in school was film, and I was actually filming an event for the Italian Chamber of Commerce. This would have been the year after the Olympics. And while I was filming that event, I met a group of denim manufacturers who were looking for somebody who could basically be their North American liaison for their licensed denim brands. So basically, whenever a brand in Europe wanted to add denim to their offerings, they would hire them to create the denim portion of their brand. And so instead of helping them find somebody, I just said that I could do it because I love Italy and why not? So I basically started going back and forth to Italy over the course of 2 years, helping them bring their licensed brands to North America, mainly at Magic in Las Vegas. And then after a couple of years, I just noticed that they were spending the same amount of money marketing the brands that they would have to if they owned their own brand. So I asked them why they didn't just develop their own brand, and which time they asked me to help them find a designer. So I just went to Paris, taught myself how to use Illustrator, designed a collection, and said they're either going to laugh at me or buy it. And it was the latter. And so that's how I started doing fashion instead of interiors.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? It's one of those typical fashion stories where people are outside the industry and then they end up in the industry. And we see this over and over and over again. But I think you probably skipped about 14 steps in there somewhere because I still
get
it's pretty amazing that you suddenly buddied up with these people from Italy. And yeah, there's a lot of denim that comes out of Italy, it seems like. That seems to be a big source for some of the manufacturers. But you essentially started this particular business, Triarchy, with your siblings. So where did that come in? How did that come to being? And how difficult is it, or how easy is it, to work with family members?
The continuation, it's a through line, because what ended up happening in Italy was during the financial crisis that took place there, a lot of the factories had to close down, which was really sad because I truly enjoyed working in Italy, and the town that I worked in, right outside of Campobasso, it's basically one family that runs, you know, so you go to lunch with the same people, dinner with the same people. So that was a real, my initial experience of working in fashion and working in denim was very familial. And so when that all stopped, I kind of took stock at what I'd been doing for the last 2 years and realized that I had designed a denim line and it wasn't going to see the light of day. So I took the samples and came back to Canada and sat down with my brother and sister and just said, why don't we start a denim brand with all of this work that I've just done? And there wasn't a lot of hesitation because we were all in a place in our lives where we were kind of just starting to do what we were going to be doing. And so my brother has a background in business. My sister was modeling at the time. It just kind of made sense. And we've been working together ever since. And I haven't had any negative experiences working with family. It's been quite easy. We're a very close family, but I would also say, I think one of the reasons why it's so easy is because none of us live in the same city. So it's not like we're in the same room together. That helps for sure.
Yeah. This never happens. I mean, this is crazy that all the stars aligned.
Yeah.
The stars aligned for Triarchy.
Yeah. Sounds like a great team.
I would always say that I never sought out denim. I never sought out fashion. It really seemed to present itself and we just kept following the road that was laid in front of us. We're still doing that to this day.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Sounds
like it was meant to be. So what are your responsibilities for Triarchy?
That's a great question because really I have a job title, but it doesn't even really matter. I mean, technically my job title is CEO and creative director, but we all wear all the hats. We're all on every call. We're all making all the decisions. We're a very small team. And it's impossible to say that like this is my role. I mean, yes, I design the seasonal collections. I bring them to life with Marika, our director of product. And then we always run them by my sister and she kind of muses in on it. And it's just a very, you know, like we have titles, but they're not set in stone.
So you're more like the creative director.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your priority then? Is that your priority? If you had to sit down and say,
you know, that's another great question because I would love it to be my priority. But, you know, the truth is that a fashion brand has to be a business before it can be anything else.
Exactly.
And so, yeah. And so we have all these lovely ideas. Oh, creative. I want to do all these beautiful things and blah, blah, blah. But if it's not making financial sense, it doesn't matter. And so, you know, more so my focus turned to responsibility. I use that word intentionally because sustainability doesn't really retain a lot of integrity for me anymore. But my ability to create through a lens of responsibility, you know, it goes from here to here. Because all of these things we love in fashion are damaging to the planet, full stop. It's not, oh, maybe a little bit. It's like, no, this is future garbage. And so it really removes so much possibility when we look at it through the lens of future garbage. And so as much as being a creative director, it really is more making sure we're not creating future garbage before we create anything.
Yeah, but that helps narrow your focus in terms of the environmental mission built within the company. Then you can leave a lot of the quote unquote garbage decisions to the side. I think that helps you focus, does it not?
It does, but we're still playing in a very old system that expects more every season. And when you're coming to them with less, they don't get it. And so that's been a big learning curve for everyone when interacting with Triarchy because we're not coming to market every season with 100 new pieces. We're coming with 25, 30. And if that's not enough, then I can't help you. And we're probably not a good partner for you.
Yeah. Well, but you have a niche market that probably appreciates that. So you lived in Canada, you lived in China, you lived in Italy, you lived in the United States where you're living now. So you're a real cosmopolitan person, Adam. You're a global entrepreneur, which, you know, we found out just from our podcast is, you know, fashion's an international business. There's a lot of interest around the world. People will hear the podcast in 80 different countries. It's pretty amazing. But that has got to, you know, give you some insight in terms of your own business, because you've seen so much in terms of how the business is run around the world. Is that true? Or do you, are you basically, look, it's ABC, it's of the business, it's, you know, it's numbers, it's pretty simple.
I mean, the global experience is definitely there. For Triarchy itself, we do only sell and operate in North America by choice. So it's a very, as much as, you know, the experience in Italy and the experience in China has, you know, gleaned a lot of perspective, it doesn't really influence the decision making of the company because we only operate in North America. But obviously, it's been hugely beneficial. And whenever we look towards expanding into new markets, I have an ability to understand what those markets are, which is beneficial for sure.
So during a recent interview, you shared that you and your siblings paused between 2016 and 2018 to reconsider the company and its mission. What led to this break, and how did you eventually relaunch the company?
Yeah, I think it really came down to, you know, as we were trying to grow the brand, it just became so clear how diluted the market was. And when we removed our egos from the equation, really the answer was that the world doesn't need another denim brand. I mean, it doesn't. That holds true today. And so we really reevaluated and just said, if we're going to continue doing this, then the brand needs to be a vehicle that can show the industry that you can make jeans better, and not just for one or two token sustainability pieces of marketing, but for the brand as a whole. And so, you know, this was before sustainability became a trend and a talking point. We took the brand offline and we started from scratch again and just said, like, okay, how do we do this? Where are the partners that are building the technologies that will allow us to make cleaner jeans? What does that even look like? And it was the, you know, years of trial and error that eventually led us to discovering the partners, many of whom we still work with today, that have allowed us to bring jeans to market that on a rack look the same, but behind the curtain, it's a completely different product. I mean, we, with our Italian mill, we launched the world's first plastic-free stretch denim, which to me is the holy grail of jeans. I mean, consumers have become so, you know, conditioned to expect stretch in their fabrics. Most of the jeans we sell are just crude oil plastic, but people are walking around in them thinking that they're denim. They're not. You're wearing a plastic bag. It resembles that in its DNA more than it does a pair of jeans. And so to be able to bring a pair of jeans that will still give you the comfort, none of the crude oil, none of the microplastics, like that's what we set out to do. And the fact that we were able to do it is awesome, because it was never on the board. It was never, okay, plastic-free stretch. But it's through working with people and seeing that you share the same integrity and you share the same desire to better the industry, you come up with really incredible technologies that do, in fact, just that.
Yeah, it's a very motivating story. The fact that you just kind of stopped and cleared your head, and it wasn't for a day or two, it was for, you know, a couple of years. I mean, you kind of re-envisioned the company, and then it's also a depressing story too, in the sense that you had to do it, or you thought you had to do it, because everyone's kind of walking around in plastic bags. And we know this. I mean, we've interviewed enough people that we know what's going on in the fashion industry.
We're in the process of doing it again. You know, once you hit certain milestones and you really take stock of everything, there's always ways in which it can be done better. And there's always new technologies that are presenting themselves. And we are in the very early stages of testing new technology that would completely eliminate the laundry process of denim altogether. It's more than I ever thought would be possible. It essentially is a technology that allows you to digitally dye the entire garment in one go. And so we would now be going from, you know, let's say that I felt as though we reached peak sustainability with the plastic-free stretch and with our low water washes and with our refusal to use chemicals. To me, that was peak sustainability a year ago, right? And then this new technology comes out and now there's a peak here. And this was our peak before. So I'm moving over to the higher mountain. I'm doing that as we speak because it's impossible to ignore the benefits of being able to eliminate laundry entirely from the denim making process.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's a shame that there's not more manufacturers following you in terms of what you're doing or trying to figure out.
But that's what makes them so different. That's their differentiator.
Yeah, it's a huge differentiator.
Yeah.
So Triarchy is based in LA, but the products are produced in Istanbul in a special factory, the Strom factory. Maybe you can explain a little bit about that. I love the fact that there's this emphasis on not only just the quality of the product, but then the worker rights related to this factory. So, I mean, it makes sense that you're making it overseas versus right there where you're at in LA, which is apparently like the denim capital for the United States. But maybe you can explain a little bit about why you chose Istanbul.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I would love if we could manufacture the jeans in LA as cleanly as we do overseas. But to date, it really hasn't been a viable option. Because if I was to do that, my retail would have to be $500. And circling back to how we started the conversation, if the business doesn't work, it doesn't work. So, you know, you have to be able to, you know, sustainability to date has been such an affluent conversation. It's not accessible. It's not affordable. And so if you don't make it accessible and affordable, it's kind of irrelevant.
It's not practical.
It's not practical. It just becomes a case study, which mm-hmm. is cute and lovely. And the industry definitely benefits from it, no question. But then it kind of just stops there. And it's like, okay. Like, so, you know, And then, of course, now with the, you know, whole tariff situation that we experienced this year, it definitely changes the viability, but there's no alternative on U.S. soil. So I don't get any, let's not go down that road. But, you know, when you're looking for a partner that can handle the levels of responsible manufacturing that you need in order to produce your collection with integrity, you also need to make sure that they are in fact treating their workers well, because if workers aren't being treated well, that's not a sustainable environment. And the thing about a lot of overseas factories is when different countries have different standards, it's kind of impossible to police it. And I experienced this firsthand many times, but with the factories in Istanbul, like it's a very transparent environment. We're actually leaving on Monday to go do a factory visit. The doors are wide open. We see everything. I have, you know, a lot of direct communication with the owners. I've never had a problem with them. They've always been very true to their word.
Yeah, and this is obviously a huge problem within the fashion industry. Just the, you know, you can go down the slave labor road and child labor, all kinds of weird stuff that is happening kind of right under our noses. And, you know, people don't understand why the t-shirt costs $5 at Kohl's, but that's for another podcast for sure. But it's exciting and important to see that if you're following this kind of environmental consciousness with regard to how you produce the jean, it makes sense to equally weight, you know, the workers' rights of that equation. So, you know, that's very impressive.
You see, you know, there's a lot of content coming out now around people blowing the whistles on sustainable brands that do not adhere to any sort of workers' rights whatsoever. And it's, you know, it's just, who cares if the product is sustainable and was a low water wash, if the person was doing it isn't even earning a living wage? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, the greenwashing and that whole scam. Again, that's a whole nother show.
True.
So, Adam, who is Renewn and how are they incorporated into the Triarchy brand?
Yeah, so on the subject of greenwashing. I personally do not think that in this day and age, a brand can speak to its own sustainability claims. And I don't necessarily even say that for fear of malicious intent. It's just that I don't think anyone is well-versed enough to speak to it accurately. And I think that the greenwashing often comes because of people's lack of education around the subject. And so partying with a third-party auditor is really the only way to accurately communicate sustainability claims. And so Renoon is that third-party auditor. And so basically how it works is whenever we're in production, we connect Renoon with the factory so that they can get all of the information from the mill, the factory, the wash, and they put all the pieces together with transaction certificates so that when the garment is finished, there's a QR code inside each pair of jeans we make. And when you scan that QR code, it takes you on a verified journey of where the cotton was grown, where the fabric was woven and dyed, where the garment was cut, sewn, and washed. And you can go through and see all of these places. You can download the organic cotton certificate. You can see the carbon offset projects that we donated to make it carbon neutral. It's a full verified supply chain published via a third-party auditor. Because again, if a brand is doing it themselves, you can say whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. You don't know what they're really doing.
You don't know. And that's why you walk by a window of a fast fashion retailer and it says, you know, conscious collections.
Yeah, but how do we know?
It's just nonsense. And so you need a third-party auditor to publish and verify the claims. That's what Renoon does for us.
That's amazing. That's another differentiator for them.
Yeah. Okay. And here's the question everyone will ask. What is the cost, like per garment? What is the cost for that to happen? Is it pennies per garment to do it?
Yeah. The cost is not high. It's more that, you know, when I'm putting together the line items of a pair of jeans and, you know, you have fabric, you have wash, you have trim, buttons, thread, blah, blah, blah. This is a mandatory line item in order to make the garment. If you can't have this on there, then you can't make the garment because then you're just contributing to future garbage. You have to be able to stand by the products you make and speak to them eloquently. Otherwise, it's all bullshit. And I really do believe that. And that's why you see all these brands with their marketing and it's like, but you're selling plastic. What are we doing here? I ask that question a lot. But it's a mandatory line item. And so the cost is not huge. It shocks me that more brands do not do this. It really does. It's time consuming. Sure. It's time consuming. You have to sit down with a spreadsheet and put your styles in and get it over to the, but what time consuming, like 3 hours?
Yeah. That's my next question. You know, how many brands are doing this? And I mean, Renoon has
not a lot.
Yeah. So they have a business, so they must be doing it for some brands, but.
Well, they're doing it a lot in Europe.
Oh, I see.
So they're based in Europe and they work a lot with European brands because Europe is introducing legislations and things that will make these kind of technologies mandatory, which that obviously isn't happening on this side of the pond.
So you're ahead of the game then?
Apparently.
This is where Mike's question from question 4 comes in. You know, how does your experience around the world, you know, get incorporated into Triarchy? That's a perfect example. I love that. And we will be right back with Adam from Triarchy after this message from our sponsor, Ome Organics, OmeOrganics.com.
Hi, I'm Christine. You may know me as co-host of Fashion Cast, but I'm also the founder and CEO of Ome Organics. I believe skincare should be simple. Our hyaluronic cream is all you need to nourish your skin morning and night. Sourced from the highest quality organic ingredients from around the world and manufactured in an FDA facility right here in the USA, this incredible cream works to firm, deeply moisturize, and smooth the appearance of your skin. Please visit omeorganics.com and use promo code FASHIONCAST to receive a 15% discount off your first purchase, and you will receive our monthly newsletter free. Now, back to the show.
And we're back with Adam from Triarchy. Adam, who is your target market? And, you know, I know you used to carry men's jeans, or you had a line. What happened to the men's line also?
I'll start there. I think when we, you know, when we did that conscious pause of, you know, figuring out how to make jeans more responsibly, that was also when we realized that we have to pick a lane in order to tell this story, because a men's line and a women's line, it's not just, oh, we make men's and women's. It really is two separate brands. It's two separate sales teams. It's two separate market weeks. It's two separate channels of communication. So really, it's double the workload. And so, like I said, like, we're a very small team, and we don't have the bandwidth to do both. And so it's something we talk about all the time. In the last year, we really were planning on actually having first men's samples done in September. But this year, the rug got pulled out under us, as it did many people. So we pushed it to a further back burner. It's still there. We actually have the samples on the table. I'm wearing one of them. It's there, and we want it to happen, but we're not going to do it until we feel very comfortable and calm about doing it. Because it's just too much. It's too much work to put on such a small team that's already working so hard, you know. But it's happening.
Yeah, that's a great lesson for all fashion brands. So pick a lane. Just pick a lane. Because some of these brands, they don't.
Yeah. It's better to specialize.
These smaller brands, they want to be everything to everybody.
Exactly.
And then they're nobody to anybody, you know. It's just, so pick a lane. Okay, I understand that. So now, who is the target market?
Yeah, which is always a very interesting question, because, you know, as a denim brand that's selling in all the stores we sell at the price point we sell at, it's a very specific girl that shops in these stores. But in the same breath, when you put product and purpose over everything else, it does speak to a different customer. And so we really do find that our customer is somebody who has the ability to take a minute and hear our messaging, who wants to put something better on her body. And so that doesn't really come down to an age bracket for me. That comes down to somebody who has had enough of wearing plastic, who's had enough of wearing future garbage, and who knows that fewer better things will do her better in the long run. And we do find that girl in a lot of the stores that we sell at. It's really difficult to get the messaging across because our attention spans are pretty much down to nothing now, which is why I love this little thing that I do personally called the 5-minute rule, which is where whenever I'm shopping in real life or online and I want to buy something, I'll put it in the cart or I'll put it down and I'll walk away for 5 minutes and I'll let the dopamine rush pass. Because it's a chemical reaction in our brain. That's all shopping is. And so I'll put it down. I'll walk away for 5 minutes, have a coffee, come back. 9 out of 10 times, I never transact on the thing I wanted to buy. And 1 out of 10 times, I do. And those 1 out of 10 times, it fills my life with fewer better things. And so I try to get that messaging across through Triarchy all the time. Like, don't buy this unless you really sat with it for a minute and went, yeah, that'd be great. Not, I gotta buy this.
Yeah, yeah. That's fantastic advice.
Yes. God bless you, Adam. Mm-hmm. That's a great reminder, especially this time of the year.
I know. You know?
I did it on Black Friday, actually, because you get the emails, right? My inbox, 60 million emails. Uh-huh. And there were things from brands, you know, even a couple things that I had that I'm like, oh, wouldn't be the worst idea to have another one of those for when this gets old. But every time I'm like, no, I'm good. I have enough. It's okay.
It's not something you need. Yeah. I'm the same way. I just hate, I hate collecting things. I'm the same way. So who are your main competitors then?
Great question, because whenever I get asked that, the filter is so narrow because I only consider other brands who operate with a sustainability lens as strong as ours. if you don't, I don't consider you a competitor. Like, there's a lot of brands that I sit with on denim floors, and when I go to the floor to look at Triarchy, I don't consider them, because they're all selling plastic garbage. So they're not a competitor. And so it's always such an interesting question, you know, when we speak with investors and stuff, like, oh, who's the competitor? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know another denim brand that's operating with the level of integrity that we operate with. I know that Reformation does a really good job with their product. I know a lot of other things that maybe aren't as great about certain brands that I can't put them in the same category as us. And sometimes I feel like that's a naive answer, you know, that you should have a list of, oh, it's this, 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 and this. But yeah, honestly, you're not doing what we're doing. And that's also why I stopped caring if people saw our development and market and like, oh, what if people rip you off? I'm like, you can't rip us off because you're not Triarchy.
Yeah, that's a really important message, this whole idea that you're out there alone. So in a way, that's very attractive, I would think, from an investor, from one standpoint. I mean, it's hard for them to compare what they're investing in. But on the other hand, it's not, because you just explained there's no one doing the same thing. Jeans aren't jeans, essentially, is what your message is.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, kind of this forward success that you have had since you kind of re-envision the company back in 2018. You know, you do have partnerships with some of these, you know, larger, well-known retailers like, you know, Bergdorf Goodman out of New York. You know, how did you land with some of these companies, and, you know, what effect has that had on the brand in terms of expansion and success and sales success and, you know, marketing, you know, internal marketing, that kind of thing?
Bergdorf Goodman was the first major account to pick us up, actually, which was...
And congratulations. Was a
huge deal. Yeah, that was a huge deal when that happened. And, you know, that just comes through telling an authentic story with integrity over and over and over again, and the message gets heard. And these stores take chances on brands like ours, and I really personally love the team at Bergdorf Goodman. We've done a lot of really beautiful things together, a lot of trial and error. And it kind of waxes and wanes. Like, sometimes you have wins and sometimes you don't. And at the end of the day, they have a business that they have to run and they have to report numbers. So as much as, you know, the sustainability is a beautiful story for us to all tell together, sometimes the machine isn't focused on that sustainability. And so...
Very diplomatic answer.
thank you. I paused there to get it.
I know.
But that's not to say that, you know, it's not of paramount importance to the team. But then shareholders tell a different story. And so it's such a fine balancing act to get it right somewhere like that. And we're still trying to do that. You know, like I said, it waxes and wanes, but I really do love the team at Bergdorf's. They're special to me.
Your sales are primarily in the US. I think you mentioned that. Are you trying to grow the company? You say, look, we're coming out, you know, twice a year. We have some new items that we're showing, but are you going into other areas, accessories? Are you thinking about other areas other than just denim?
You know, it's a two-part answer, and it all comes back to picking a lane. First of all, with where we're selling, in my mind, as much as we are a global community and a global economy, maybe pre-tariffs, it's picking a lane and getting it right. And we're still working on getting it right in North America. And so for us to expand to Europe and to other places before we feel like we've really gotten it right here, that would be a waste of everybody's time and money. And so we're not looking to that. And then as far as other categories go, this gets put in front of me all the time, and I look at it all the time. And it's kind of similar to the 5-minute rule. I'll sit and just, you know, talk to myself and just say, look, should we do t-shirts? this is a really nice sample and I like it. And I'll just sit in, the answer's always no. The gut response is always no. And so I just say, I don't think it's our time for this. You know, like we're a denim brand. We make a lot of things out of denim, jackets, shirts, skirts, pants, you name it. If it's out of denim, it gets made. And I just can't seem to push go on anything else because my gut tells me not to. So maybe one day that'll change. I'm sure it will. I mean, I'm happy for it. For now, I think we tell a really beautiful story through denim, and I'm really happy continuing to do that with this fabric, you know.
Well, you have a new cool hat too.
I was going to ask if they have hats.
They have one hat.
It's a denim. It's a denim hat, though.
What does it say? Does it say your name or?
No. It says not plastic.
Love that. Not plastic.
No plastic.
Not plastic on the front, and then.
Oh my god! I love that. I'm getting that for sure.
Yeah, no, it is.
It can also be arranged.
Yeah, triarchy.com.
Right. My gosh, I love that.
So the other thing I love about your website, you know, because, you know, you spend hours on the website, which whoever, you know, put together the website and designed the website, very smart, because I can tell it was built to keep you on, you know, because you just keep going from one page and one tab to the next. And like each one has its own little community or something going on or something to hang on to. So it keeps you on the website. So I love that. But the one thing I really liked was this environmental footprint. That's my, you know, phrase for it. And it just gives you all the information that we talked about earlier. I guess that's probably the stuff from Renewn. And, you know, maybe I'm answering my own question, but, you know, it seems to me like the whole fashion industry should be adopting at least that explanation on their website about how the product was made, where it came from, the environmental footprint, et cetera. It didn't seem like it took too much effort to do that. And, you know, whose idea was this to put it on the website?
I guess if I would have carried on with my job titles, sustainability lead would have been the next one.
Okay.
Because I really do, like I said, the world didn't need another denim brand. And the world doesn't need so many brands that keep popping up every single day. And the fact that I see so many popping up without intention is so disheartening. And the reason why so many other brands don't do it is because when you start down this road of full exposure, you uncover a lot of things that you're not doing well, ourselves included. And so we come upon these things and think, okay, so next time, how can we do it better? Now this research has shone a light on the fact that this is not so great. Next time, let's do it better. And it's a moving target and it just carries you down the road. It's not like you're going to be perfect one day or really ever. Because at the end of the day, the world doesn't need any new products. Let's be clear. But we are going to keep making them because we're going to keep making them more responsibly. And if you're out there and if you have a brand that is making new stuff that is not made responsible, what are you doing? What are you doing? It's not that hard.
So wonder if a different brand, clothing brand, comes to Triarchy and says, look, we want to white label the brand through you. You guys know what you're doing. We want to do it. We don't want to spend the money, time, effort. You guys have this down pat. Here's what we want. Are you willing to do that? Would you just start making jeans for somebody else?
Absolutely. Nothing what we do is top secret, which so often can be found in the fashion industry. And that's the beauty of what we publish through Renewn. It's all there. You can literally get the phone number for our factory via scanning the QR code in your pants. So I'm happy to share it. I'm happy to do it. It's better for all of us if we're all doing it, because if more brands come and start using the technology, it gets cheaper for me, which is great. And it also gets cheaper for you, which is great. If nobody's using it, then it just keeps being very expensive for me, which I don't like. So please use it.
So what are some of the most significant recent developments within the denim market?
Well, I can only speak to the ones that we're working with. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that the reason why Triarchy is so uniquely positioned to adopt a lot of these technologies is because of our size. I think a lot of, you know, the big brands that exist, they built their businesses on unsustainable practices, which would be very difficult to change at this point. So Triarchy is uniquely positioned in that its size and its ability to move is very nimble. Like we can look at new technologies and we can pivot into them and we can tell their stories really well. And that's why I'm so excited about this printing technology that allows us to, you know, go through the first couple rounds of sampling digitally on a digital fit model, so that we're not cutting and sewing and washing, cutting, sewing, washing, cutting, sewing, washing to get the product right. We can go through a few rounds of fits digitally, and then we can make the garment, which is a huge time and cost and resource save just in the development of the styles themselves. And then when it comes to production, we can print them, which is, it changes the industry entirely, to be honest. And I think if this technology gets adopted properly, the way that it should, it really would completely revolutionize the denim industry.
Can you share whose technology it is? Is this like a Genealogia type thing?
Genealogia is actually the company that we're working with on the design technology for the printing. And I've worked with Genealogia on all their technologies. We use their eFlow, their Ozone, I've been to Genealogia's the HQ in Valencia to develop samples with them. I love those guys. The hub in Miami as well. They've always been on the cutting edge of sustainability. We love Genealogia. And so when you partner in Genealogia and Lab Denim and you get them working together, and then it's that whole story about finding the people who understand how important it is to make products better, to make products cleaner, and who actually prioritize this across their entire business model, not just a couple token things here and there.
You're all in the same mission.
We're all in the same mission, and you really feel it. Like when I go and have meetings and I'm sitting at the table, I know that I'm with like-minded people, and we all really care and we want to progress these technologies because they're important and they tell a very important story and they allow us to do what we love without any negative consequences.
And success is a byproduct of building business with good people, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, for those who don't understand or know who Genealogia is, we actually have a podcast that was done a couple years ago. You can just kind of scroll back and listen to our podcast with Genealogia. It's one of the more listened to podcasts from the representative from Spain. So that's a great explanation. So I'm happy to hear that you are working directly with them. It sounds like you've had a long-term relationship with them, Adam. Where can our listeners find Adam and Triarchy and all the great information that you discussed today?
I would imagine Instagram is the best starting point. So at Triarchy is our brand Instagram. At Adam Triarchy is my personal Instagram. And then triarchy.com is the website. And those are the strongest touch points, I think, for finding us. And then through our retailers as well.
Adam Taubenfliegel. It was an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for appearing on FashionCast.
Likewise, thank you both very much.
Thank you for listening to FashionCast. To hear more shows and join our email list, please visit our website, fashioncast.co. You can also join us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Until next time, I'm Michael Gloucester for FashionCast, the voice of fashion.